Gain-of-function research is a type of biomedical research where pathogens are adulterated, viruses are adulterated to make them more potent or to change the way that they function.
It's a big deal. Could have been that we wouldn't have had the problem we had.
A lot of people say that, sir.
If we had this done.
There is now another new director of the nation's top public health agency. President announcing on Truth Social that Dr. Erica Schwartz will take over as the next leader of the CDC.
I do believe that mRNA technology is safe and effective.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We found in this study, looking at the vaccine adverse event reporting system, these vaccines have killed like 2,600% more children than measles has for the past 30 years.
In your entire career, how many fetuses have you worked with?
Well, I don't remember the exact number, but quite a few when we were studying them originally. Before we decided to use them to make vaccines.
The end game has always been, and Bill Gates said this very clearly in 2011, the World Health Organization has stipulated this from 2011, and they recited again in 2018 and 2019, their end game is the decrease of the population of humanity on this planet. And that's a polite way of saying that these are sociopathic murderers who are actually building weapons to conveniently turn what we call healthcare into the front line of the biggest mercenary deployment of mass murdering psychopaths we've ever seen on this planet. And we as a society need to understand that it's not coming from a foreign adversary. It's coming from domestic adversaries who are intent on destroying the orderly structure of the United States.
I think Bill Gates has done more damage to the world's health than probably any other individual, aided and abetted by Tony Fauci.
You murdering Bill Gates!
Michael Barnes!
You son of a
bitch! You have blood on your hands! You have blood on your hands!
Sure, but you're a certified medical doctor, so, I mean, you're not allowed to do something to me without consent. It's a felony. I'm asking how Bill Gates and Google run around in Latin America and here and then dump out GMO mosquitoes with God knows what to supposedly, you know, flying syringes is what they call it. Who gave him the right? I got to go to the hospital, the doctor, and sign consent forms. Why does Dr. Bill Gates get to rape me and my family and put in my body what he wants?
I believe it was Tennessee that outlawed edible vaccines in their grocery store. Because, again, you don't know what the dose is. You don't know how much you're supposed to eat. I mean, what happens if you're supposed to eat one head of lettuce and you eat 10 heads of lettuce? What kind of dose does that do to your body? The whole vaccine industry, honestly, Alex, just needs to blow up and go away.
House Bill 1894 merely would require any food that contains a vaccine or vaccine material would have to be classified as a drug and labeled as such.
So it's no secret that Bill Gates is one of the most hated evil people on earth. And that he put all his money into tax-free foundations, so he basically pays no taxes. Then he uses large parts of the profit to buy off all the major regulatory institutions of the world at the UN, globalist level, and at the national level. And people that want to kill everybody pose as liberal-loving, you know, take this shot, take this COVID shot, you can't get COVID, you can't spread it. But they want to get rid of the poor, they want to get rid of the middle class, they want to get rid of the white people, they want to get rid of everybody that basically stands in their way. And what they really want is the power to kill whoever they want.
We were going to make a movie together and they just had a beautiful new baby. And I said, well, what shots did you give the baby? She said, none. And I said, what? She said, yeah, they're too small to absorb those toxins right now. They don't have an immune system. They have an external immune system. Their mother's breast milk.
Yes.
And I said, well, why do you tell other people to get it? We said, well, that's up to them. When we went to school, it was like three shots. Now it's staggering. It's 72 different doses of 16 different vaccines before the age of six. And we're wondering, why is there, and people go, I can't have anything to do with it. I can't have anything to do with it. Are you nuts? So,
by the way, I should say for the record, I think YouTube will censor this.
No, they will.
They'll demonetize absolutely. It just for having this conversation.
I'm sorry. Well, you might have to put this out there with this part cut out.
You cannot, under any moral justification, come up with an excuse that says it's acceptable to have a death rate of American citizens. And that's a quote that has come not only from Moderna, but also from Pfizer. They accept a death rate of American citizens for the purpose of what? Their own profiteering and the mass murder of Americans.
Introducing the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter Showerhead. You're not just drinking tap water, you're showering in it, breathing the steam, and soaking your skin in it every day. When you take a hot shower, that hot water opens your pores and creates steam. That means chlorine, lead, and many other contaminants in your tap water can hit your skin, your hair, and the air you breathe inside your own bathroom. And unlike most shower filters on the market, this has independent third-party testing. SGS testing showed a 95%+ lead reduction using the system, over 99% chlorine removal, and many other chemicals. The system installs directly onto a standard shower head. It literally just takes seconds. No plumber, no tools, no modification to your plumbing. Regularly $139. Today you can get it for just $97.99. That's 30% off. VIP members of theAlexShipStore.com get it for as low as $69.99. That is beyond a steal. Secure yours now while supplies last at theAlexShipStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Live from Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
Not usually here on Sunday night, so it's a kind of new experience. Just finished watching a little while ago the Spain versus Argentina football match, which is fine. I didn't care who won, really. It's great. Spain, Argentina. I'm just glad France and England didn't win because they weren't really the French or England teams. At least Spain and Argentina mostly look like they came from those countries. So that was a benefit. But 1-0, it's pretty hard to get excited about a game where they run around for 120 minutes and at the end it's 1-0. Be that as it may, I'm trying to get a guest on tonight. We're working to include him on the show. A guy from Ireland who's up on things, has his own pretty cool YouTube channel named Derek Domino. As soon as he's linked in, we'll go to him. But otherwise, until then, I'm just watching the news out of Iran, and it's just getting crazier and crazier. It seems like we're going up this escalation ladder with no exit ramp, which is absolute insanity. We've been hitting power plants and a couple of desal plants in Iran, which is really insane because Iran only depends on desalinated water for like less than 5% of their people, where 95% of the country lives off of groundwater and reservoirs. So if the worst came to worst and all the desal plants were knocked out, that 5% of Iran, which is a few million, could just move to the rest of Iran. Whereas in the Gulf states, most of them are like 90% on desalinated water. I think Saudi Arabia is 70% and the others are like 90%. So if this gets into a complete slugfest, then where power plants and desal plants are hit, it's going to be a mass evacuation out of the Gulf states, which is millions of people, and there won't even be enough airplanes to get them out. It'll be impossible to fly people out in that kind of a time scale, not to mention it would be in the middle of a war, right? It would be in the middle of a war. So how are you going to fly aircraft in and out when the missiles are flying? You can only live 3 days without water. I don't know what they have in terms of cisterns and reservoirs in these countries, but it's probably not that much. So the fact that we're pushing towards this from our end, from the American end, is almost apocalyptic. It's almost like trying to goad Russia into striking Europe, to striking at the NATO countries, which we're also doing. You know, if you look at a big map of Asia, and it covers from the, say, the equator all the way up to the North Pole, and it's centered over Europe and Central Asia. This war now has extended from Murmansk, which is like the very top of Russia on the Arctic. That's where long-range drones have hit, all the way down to the bottom of Yemen at the Bab el-Mandab Strait. We're talking 8,000 kilometers of a war. And in the middle, there's only a very small gap of about 500 kilometers, which is from the Crimea area, the eastern corner of the Black Sea, the Sea of Azov, and even the Caspian Sea, to the top of Iran, which has also been hit. So there's not much terrain left that hasn't been part of either the Russia-Ukraine war or the America-Israel-Iran war. Just a few hundred kilometers. I mean, I'm in Florida. It would be easier for me, it would be closer to drive from where I am to Miami than to cover the distance between the northern front and the southern front of what is increasingly looking like a world war. Because, you have America and NATO essentially behind both of these wars, and you can include our little evil brother Britain in there, also on our side. Going all the way back to 2014 and the Maidan coup, we've been trying to provoke this world war since it, for the last 12 years. It broke out into the open with the special military operation. Now we've figured out a way to launch missiles deep into Russia from Ukraine. And this is strictly using Ukraine as a cutout, as a launch pad. So the Germans and the Brits are making these long-range drones that are as large as little airplanes, shipping them in parts to Ukraine so that technically they're launched from Ukraine at Russia. But every part of them is made in Germany and made in Great Britain, every single part of them. I mean, imagine if China set up a missile factory in Mexico and was launching missiles into Chicago and into San Francisco and Dallas, but saying, hey, don't look at us. They're coming from Mexico. You can only attack Mexico. We've got nothing to do with it. Well, both Iran and Russia are about over being punched around like this. In Russia, they call it E-Day. They're waiting for Escalation Day, meaning when are we going to take the gloves off and hit the real enemies, which are these NATO countries? They've publicly announced the exact street addresses of the factories where these long-range drone components and missile components are made, warning Germany and Britain that you're risking a world war. And Russia explicitly says, we don't take nuclear retaliation off the table. If this is an existential crisis for Russia, we're not going to go down without using all of our weapons. They've been very explicit about this. Yet we continue to push forward. Now, in the southern front of this same war, which is the Iran war, every expert is saying it makes no sense. America is going to back down. It's a total disaster for the entire world if all of the infrastructure around the Persian Gulf is blown up. It can't be rebuilt, even in years. The world will go into a Great Depression. There will be famines in the poor countries around the world. It took half of a century. It took 50 or 60 years to build up all the Gulf petrochemical infrastructure, all of these power plants, aluminum smelters,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10
desalinization plants that provide millions of people with drinking water. It took many decades to build this stuff. We can blow it up in a matter of weeks. Well, there's no magic formula for replacing that stuff. It can be destroyed in a minute, what took years to build. And if it's all destroyed because we keep pushing this war, I think that there's no avoiding the world going into a great deep depression. And we've even hit some Iranian power plants and at least 2 desalinization plants. Yeah, and we'll keep going at that. And Iran has said, well, then we're going to hit the desal plants and power plants on the other side. And they have. They've hit desalinization plants too, I think, in Kuwait. They're successfully pushing our aircraft and bases completely out of the Gulf. Our refueling tankers are now all the way back in Israel, some in Jordan, which means that they can't stay on the ground closer in Syria or other bases that we have unofficially. One thing with these aircraft, you can land them anywhere. I mean, there are plenty of air bases that are semi-covert, that are CIA installations. That lasted and that worked for many years. But now, in the era of persistent surveillance, 24-hour surveillance, as soon as an aircraft lands and starts unloading equipment, it's seen. And we saw what happened a few nights ago. The Iranians preemptively struck. I'm not sure if it was a HIMARS or an ATACMS, but we unloaded a portable missile launch facility, drove it to the Kuwait-Iran border, and it was hit before they could even launch. So Iran has announced they're not just going to wait for the old tit-for-tat. They're going to be aggressive and start going up their own escalation ladder. Well, what are you going to do when you have 100 of these big refueling air tankers like our KC-135s, big aircraft, you know, the size of like a 767, and you have 100 of them in Israel? And so far, Iran in this phase of the war hasn't struck Israel. But it's going to be very tempting because the aerial refuelers are essentially the lifeblood of this war. We can't fly straight over Iran. When you see they're shooting down Predators, that's the aircraft that we put over Iran are the unmanned aircraft, and they're getting shot down. So we have to launch these very expensive standoff missiles from just outside or just over Iranian airspace. But to get there from Jordan or Israel, they have to refuel. Well, so the critical linchpin are these refuelers that are all now parked in Ben Gurion Air Force or just Ben Gurion Airport near Tel Aviv, and at a couple of air bases in the very southern corner of Israel. I think that they're going to be hit. That's going to be the next big escalation. Anyway, just watch this space. So joining me now, and we'll see how this hookup works. I've never met the man personally, but I really enjoy his YouTube channel. This is a fellow going by Derek Domino. And he's actually, an Irish guy living in Ireland, watching the world fall apart around him, watching the Great Replacement in action as Irish traders bring in tens of thousands of mostly third world savages to tear apart the very Irish civilization, something that they never faced even with the British, who at least were Europeans and Christians. What they're bringing in now are Hindus and Muslims to totally destabilize and wreck the country. Anyway, I don't know if Derek is up, but as soon as we can do a screen with him, I'll know he's here and we can start talking. You there, Derek? There he is.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I am.
There's the Derek Domino studio. Yeah, a couple of videos ago, you were talking about the American diaspora, the Irish American diaspora. And of course, there's lots more of us in Australia and Canada and elsewhere. But right across the pond from New York to Boston, Philadelphia, my family's from Baltimore. Anyway, there's supposedly more people claiming Irish ancestry in the States than there are in Ireland. And, they go to Ireland, they support the economy, they rent cars and stay in B&Bs and hotels. But increasingly, it's not the same old Ireland. And, that was the subject of your podcast was we need to reach out to the Americans and let them really know what's going on. So we've got 10 minutes and you lead and I'll follow.
Well, look, first let me say it's great to be on your show and it's great to be on this wonderful channel. Wow, I've really hit the big time now. And it's a great chance for me to speak to not only an international audience, but to an American audience of the US. As you rightly say, Matt, the Irish diaspora in the United States is estimated to be somewhere between 30 and 40 million. That's huge numbers compared to the homeland here, if you like, Ireland, little Ireland here. We have just over 5 million population, as you know, which is a big jump from 4 million, which it was for most of my growing up. And as you've just alluded to there, our government, our traitorous government and a traitorous political class, because it's not just the government, they have been absolutely flooding this country with absolutely massive amounts of unvetted
immigration, both legal and illegal. And it's a complete open border situation. So what I was really talking about the other day in my video, which you mentioned there, was that Ireland has become a very, very closely managed democracy. I wouldn't even call it a democracy now. I would call it something else, which is, shall we say, drifting off into the left sphere of political thought. But it's definitely not an old school democracy, because the government and the opposition are all in lockstep now, completely in lock. There is no opposition here. It's left to voices on alternative media like YouTube and like X and like Facebook to a degree to try and put out the real story of Ireland, as in Ireland 2026. And it's nothing like what the mainstream media here in Ireland, who are controlled by the government, puts out on the airwaves. And my point was that we are so smothered here, Matt, as a populace, with government overreach in terms of they control the obviously the laws of the land, and they control to a large degree, I would say, the judiciary, which is supposed to be a completely separate thing, and also now they control the mainstream media insofar as they basically prop them up financially, and whoever pays the piper, as we say, calls the tune. So we, as ordinary Irish people, we are seeing our country being changed beyond all recognition at a pace that is unprecedented, absolutely frightening. And any time we try and you know, raise our voices against what's going on, we are absolutely pummeled by the mainstream media, who are the attack dogs of the regime, and by the political class. And if we get too far out of our box, they arrest us. So it's not good. And my point was, if more of our Irish American brethren knew exactly what was going on here, and how bad things were, and how much Ireland has changed, even in 20 years, even in 10 years, man, I think they would be absolutely aghast. I think they would be horrified.
Well, Derek, out of the 5 million or so living in Ireland today, and you said it wasn't long ago it was 4 million, how many of that extra million are not born bred Irish, are from Ukraine or somewhere else? It's a high percentage.
It's a crazy percentage, and there's still 4 million Irish people here. That hasn't really changed. And as I said, for all of my childhood growing up, Ireland was always kind of around the 4 million mark, 3.94, 4.1. Now, it's, last I checked, officially, and this is officially, which I don't believe, I do not believe for a second, 5.3, drifting to 5.4. So essentially, you have 1.5 million, and I would say it's more than that. I definitely believe it. From being on the ground here day after day after day, it's more than that. They're saying it's 24% is foreign-born. I would say it's higher than that. So essentially, there's still 4 million of us, Matt, and there's an extra 1.5 million officially. I would say it's more like 2.5, if not 3. It's really crazy, crazy
but
times
when,
over.
But when
here.
You bring in, when you bring in so many non-Irish, and you give them preference for housing and jobs, give them funding, and then at the same time you're freezing out the young Irish so that they can't marry, form a family, pay rent. I've been reading that an enormous percentage of the young, what would be the future of Ireland, are just giving up and leaving Ireland, which has always been the story of Ireland. You say it's been hovering around 4 million. That's because so many Irish have just quit and gone abroad. But at the very time now that this new population is coming in, the best hope for the future is emigrating, and the birth rate of these people that are coming in is to have 5 or 6 children. That is like a long ago dream of Ireland. If the Hindus and Muslims come in and have 5 or 6 children, bring in their extra wife and call her a single woman, And they're all paid, and they're given. This also must be terrible for the morale of Irish. I mean, it just seems like you're being beaten down and demoralized at every turn. And I'm just wondering, at what point is there any point where the Irish will, you know, get up their Irish and actually go kinetic?
This is the great question, the great debate over here at the moment. Ireland is becoming a powder keg. It seriously is. And you rightly say there, the flower of Irish youth, highly educated, brilliant people, young people, are leaving. They're leaving in droves. You could go to Dublin Airport any day and you will see Irish people going through the departures lounge. And if you go to the arrivals gate, you will see people coming in from all corners of the globe, many of them without even passports. And immediately right. They just manage to get here. And as soon as they say the magic word asylum, bingo, they've hit the jackpot. And they get everything handed to them. And they know that there is almost no chance that they will ever be sent back to anywhere. They know this. Right. Like, we live in an age of technology, as you know. Everybody's got WhatsApp. Everybody's communicating. I could be standing in the queue for the supermarket, and the person behind me is having a chat with somebody in the Congo. You know, that's where we're at now. So these people know that Ireland, as they call it, Treasure Ireland, is what it's becoming known as, that it's just the land of freebies. And all you have to do is, by some manner or means, make your way here. Once you get here, whether it be on a boat, a ferry, a plane, or whatever, and we are in Ireland, so you can't just walk here. But if you manage to get here, they know, as soon as you manage to get inside the border, you just have to say the magic word, and Ireland Inc. unlocks the treasure chest just for you.
If you can make it to France, and you'll be helped at every chance along the way, given a debit card and transportation, language help. If you make it to France, you can get on a rubber boat, 100 at a time, push off into the channel, and this trader organization, the RNLI, this Lifeboat Institute, it's like a quasi-official Coast Guard, they go out and pick up 100 men at a time, and it's all men, it's all young fighting age men. Bring them to the UK, put them up in a hotel. But there's nothing to stop them from catching the ferry to Northern Ireland, which is also part of the UK. Many Americans are still a little bit hazy on this, but the six lost counties of Ulster are part of the UK. So there's nothing that stops a guy. If he can get to France, he can get to the UK, he can get to Belfast, and he can catch a bus or a cab. The next stop, he's in Dublin, joining the horde.
Well, it's estimated that up to 90% of our asylum claimants come through the northern border. They, as you say, they manage to get their way into the UK, and once they've got there, they just catch a ferry across to Northern Ireland, and then it's just get a train, get a taxi, you know, get a bicycle, and there's no border checks. It's the free common travel area, as we call it, which worked for a long time. It was a great idea, it worked fine when we were ourselves, when we were us. But those days are long gone. We have people now flooding in to the UK from Somalia, Congo, from all far-flung parts of the globe, the poorest parts of the globe, sometimes the most dysfunctional parts of the globe.
I see we're coming up on a break, but on the other side of this break, we're going to talk about what I would call the Irish traitor class, and why their loyalty seems to be elsewhere than to their own Irish people. And what do we do about uprooting the Irish traitor class? We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
I'm extremely excited about this. You know, we always have the strongest turmeric at thealexjonesstore.com, and the capsules are 95% curcuminoid. That is the strongest in the market. So the very same great manufacturer that made this made it as a liquid tincture, the strongest on the market, and even better than powder because there's even better absorption, ultimate turmeric, and it's got a bunch of other amazing ingredients that are known to supercharge turmeric. I know so many people that Advil doesn't work when they have a sprained ankle or arthritis, but when they take our brand of turmeric, they go, this works better than Advil. And you know, including family I've had that's like, well, this pill's not as big as my other turmeric. My other turmeric helps, but I got to take a bunch of the pills. I said, just take two of these. And whether it's my dad or my wife or anybody, they're like, wow, this worked better. Why? Because those aren't concentrates. Those are raw turmeric. This raw turmeric's 4 to 5% curcuminoid. 95. Okay? So we're very excited about this tincture. Just a half dropper a day. So good for your whole body. 95% curcuminoids. The liquid is better absorption. And this is 60 servings per bottle, so 2-month supply. And right now, if you're a subscriber, you just sign up to lock in at 50%, canceling time for free. You lock in at 50% off. It's 25% off for everybody if you just buy it straight off at thealexjonesstore.com. The new Ultimate Liquid Turmeric Tincture. And it's got a bunch of other really cool stuff in it as well. Not just concentrated turmeric root, curcumin lunga, the strongest part, but ginger root concentrated, zingiber officinal is the, I guess, the Latin for it, and pepperdine concentrated black pepper extract. All of it synergistically works together. 250 milligrams and just a half dropper of the turmeric concentrate, 12 milligrams of the concentrated ginger, and 100 of the pepperdine black pepper extract. Very strong, an amazing product. The newest product at thealexjonesstore.com. Liquid tincture, superior absorption. Pepperdine inclusion is the difference maker. Turmeric without pepperdine is largely wasted. Most budget companies do that. Natural enzymes and things in the concentrated pepper get into the cells quicker. Triple ingredient synergy. Turmeric, ginger, concentrated black pepper, 60 servings, vegan friendly, GMO free, gluten free, free of major allergies, natural flavors only, no additives or synthetic flavorings, and it funds this operation. And anybody getting the products, the other great supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, the t-shirts, the collectible coins, they're about to sell out, the amazing shower filters of the highest rated, taking out the most toxins of any brand at an incredibly low price, should be a VIP. Every month in your profile, it charges you $30. You can cancel anytime for free. You instantly, when you're charged, get $40 in your profile to spend. Special deals, special offers, and sales on top of all the other sales. Everyone should be a VIP. And if you're worried about some products that sell out from time to time, just become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on all. Okay, subscribe, cancel anytime. So become a VIP, become a subscriber, and lock it in with no commitment from you, but it's locked in for you if you choose to keep it locked in at thealexjonesstore.com. New Liquid Ultimate Turmeric, the strongest on the market. So good for your whole body and inflammation. Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The Patriots' choice and globalists' dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Okay, we're back. If you're still up, be glad you're not in Ireland, because it would be already after midnight. So I really appreciate Derek staying up late tonight. Midnight's not that late for young lads like us. But yeah, it's only 7:30 where I am, and I know it's later than that. Hopefully you're not keeping anybody awake
In yours. No, Matt, you're fine. No, the pubs are closed, so I'm all yours. I'm all yours.
Exactly. They still have closing time. Right.
Well, no, we do.
We were talking about the trader class, and it's really a different time. If my American audience can indulge me, there's so much Americans really just gloss over or skip about Ireland. Most Americans, if they've heard of Ireland and the troubles, they think, where are the IRA? Why aren't they doing something? And Americans don't understand that the troubles occurred in the six counties of Northern Ireland, the UK part of Northern Ireland, which goes all the way back to the treaty partition in the 1920s, when they thought, we'll sort that out in a few years. Well, a century later, it's not sorted out. So the troubles, what Americans think of as the civil war conflict that went on in Belfast and Derry, that didn't happen in the Republic of Ireland, the rest of Ireland. The rest of Ireland is the land of 10,000 welcomes. The rest of Ireland has had a century of peace and harmony. And I think it's, in a sense, it's like bred the survival fighting instinct out. Because, you know, the Irish have become a nation of innkeepers and bar publicans, not tour guides, not fighters like they are in Northern Ireland. So it's not so surprising to me that some of the harsher kinetic fighting back has happened in Belfast, because they still have grandpas that will tell them, look, when are you going to start fighting? I mean, it's in living memory. The Troubles are in living memory of the youth in Northern Ireland, but not in the Republic. Nobody has a grandfather that fought in any war. Maybe there's a monument, or you read a book or see a documentary, but it's a long time in the past for the Republic. So I'm not sure if it'll all kick off at the same time. I wouldn't be surprised if it kicks off first in the North, because they have more of a living memory of fighting for what you... And I'm not even taking sides, Irish versus Protestant. That's a different issue. Just the fact that we'll fight for our neighborhood. You know, we'll go to the barricades. That's not in the Republic of Ireland recent history.
No, it isn't. And I grew up not that far from the border all through the 70s and 80s. So it was very much a feature of my everyday life. And the Northern Ireland, the North and the Troubles, as we call them, that could have been on the other side of the world in some ways, really, because it, apart from a couple of incidents over the years, it really never affected us. I mean, it was on the news every night, a car bomb here, a soldier shot there, terrible, terrible things happening. And it was just every day, every week, 52 weeks a year. But it down in the Republic, the south of Ireland, that violence was a world away for us. Didn't affect us in a physical sense. But Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, since the peace agreements, the Good Friday agreements in the North, which were amazing and did amazing work, and really relations between the two communities up in Northern Ireland have steadily improved. And it's not perfect. I mean, it's not a finished project by any manner or means, but it's a way, way better than it ever was, and it was constantly improving. But down in the south, you see, we went all in on the EU, the empire of the EU, and it is an empire, let nobody tell you otherwise. And we essentially sold out our political class, the traitorous class. They essentially handed over piece by piece our sovereignty to Brussels. And most of our laws now are just copied and pasted from Brussels. Dublin, the Dáil, our parliament in Dublin is essentially now just a county council. It doesn't have, it's given away most of its powers. And the EU is a large part of the reason why Ireland is getting into the mess that it is, and is in the mess that it is. Because the one thing the EU absolutely detests is nationalism, or a spirit of nationalism. So they are doing their absolute best to dilute it, and if possible, to eradicate it. And you can't do a better job of eradicating a proud, historic people, a tribe, than just influx massive numbers of other people who don't care about their history, their heritage, their culture. And that's exactly what they're doing. And it's sad to see, but a lot of it's coming from the EU, make no mistake. And we have never had here in Ireland, in my opinion, a worse set of politicians, a weaker set of politicians, and I would say, I'd go forward and say a more traitorous set of politicians. They don't give a damn about Ireland, the Ireland I love, the Ireland I was born into and grew up in. And I would suggest also, Matt, from knowing your background, I would say you feel the same way. We had something absolutely unique here. Unique. And our politicians have given it away. They've sold us out. They've pulled the rug from under us.
Yeah, you know, it's I think Ireland becomes a really, I call it like laboratory experiment number one, because Ireland never had colonies. You know, you can say, well, the Pakistanis and the Indians that are moving to Britain, it's the fault of Britain because they had these colonies in South Asia, in Africa, in the Caribbean. So what do you want? They're coming home. They're part of the Commonwealth of Nations. That was never the case in Ireland. And it seems, watching Irish politics, that it's set up so that there's no chance of a nationalist ever reaching national office. That you have to get the permission of a very very bureaucratic, stick in the mud politicians in every county to even be put up for a national office. So you're only ever going to get Tweedledee or Tweedledum. In the American context, you're only going to get a Biden or a McCain. There's your Republican, you know, somebody like Lindsey Graham or a Blumenthal. You know, it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't even encourage you to turn out to vote, because no matter what, they just represent the EU. And it seems like to this class of Irish politicians, serving in Dublin is just a launch pad for Brussels, or for some NGO where they'll triple their salary. And the way they get that job is by being a faithful servant of the EU while they're holding some position. But they're not loyal to the Irish people whatsoever.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the head there. The type of politician we have now is a total careerist. Total careerist. All they know is politics. In the case of Simon Harris, or the T-boy as we call him here, he's never had a proper job. He essentially flunked out of college and went into politics in a junior way and got propelled up through the ranks. And he is exactly a picture perfect for what the EU wants. You see, there couldn't be a Michael Collins now, Matt, or an Eamon de Valera. There couldn't be, because they get nowhere. The EU wouldn't want them. The EU wouldn't have them, because they'd be too absolutely dyed-in-the-wool invested in Ireland and for Ireland being for Irish people. And the EU absolutely does not want anybody with that type of character. What they want is somebody who's useless, somebody who's weak, somebody who has no backbone, somebody who can just blow in the wind and whatever, and do whatever memos they're sent, they just action them. That's what the EU wants.
And meanwhile, the immigration invasion just rolls on. And I consider the West, especially Britain and Ireland, to be in a doom loop, because you can see, and even in the United States, in places like Minnesota, if you even have 5 or 7% Somalis in a city, they become the linchpin. They promise 100% turnout to the left side, the Democrats, in say in Minneapolis, and you can see the same thing has happened across the UK, where you might only have a quarter or a third that are foreign born, but that plus the left is a guaranteed majority. And I think Ireland's at that stage where. Because Ireland, as I understand it, you can explain, it's one of the easiest countries in the world to get citizenship. You don't even need to speak English. You don't need to pledge any kind of loyalty. Just show up, and in a year or two, you're voting.
Absolutely. It's a joke. In fact, it's worse than a joke. And this is a bit of a debate going on here at the moment, because the man was recently sentenced for stabbing three young children in Parnell Street a few years ago, viciously stabbed them. And then thankfully, nobody was murdered, but you know, very serious injuries done there. And it turned out, Matt, that he was given. This man was an Algerian man. He'd been in the country for about 20 years, knocking around, never had a job on welfare, couldn't speak English. No investment at all, no integration into the society, didn't add anything to the society. And yet, somehow, he was granted citizenship, couldn't even speak the language, never had a job. And then he went out because seemingly he'd been refused his welfare check, or they were going to reduce it or something like that. And he just went berserk with a knife, started stabbing kindergarten children. And that raised the question which the politicians do not want to answer. They don't even want to have the conversation. Like, what are we doing here? Like, are we just handing out citizenship like free candy? Is that where we're at? And essentially, that is where we're at. Because it seems that...
But this is why the internet is so important, because the official media in Ireland is so locked out. You won't find out, for example, that this man that stabbed the Irish American lady to death a week or two ago, you wouldn't even know that he was not an Irishman. They'll keep it if it's, you know, that it's not an Irishman if they refuse to describe him or give his name, and they know it perfectly well. They gave him time to run off to Jordan. And this is another one of these shirkers that seduced some ditzy American broad who had moved to Ireland full of fairy tales, her wonderful Middle Eastern boyfriend who ended up killing her when she finally opened her eyes up and was going to throw the bum out. So he killed her for it. And how many times does a story have to be repeated? I mean, at what point does the Irish political class say, or are they just not worried about the Irish political class? The Irish political class go to hell.
Look, the whole system here is broken. It is. It's absolutely dysfunctional from top to bottom. And that's why, as you say, the internet, alternative media is so important, because, there's just no battle here now, man. No, the battle's over. We just didn't know it was on. We are now the resistance. We're the partisans in the hills now. People like me and many others who are trying to put out videos and put the real truth and story across to, especially Irish people, but also the diaspora. Because if you tune in to RTE, our state broadcaster, which is totally, they have to go cap in hand to the government every few months for a bailout because they're broke, and all the mainstream media outlets, every newspaper, magazine, the private TV show, they're all in the tank for the government, because the government is giving them all grants. It's funding them. Without the government, their business model wouldn't work. They couldn't make money. So, as I said, the system is broken. See, if the political class, who no longer fear the journalists who are supposed to hold them to account, but they don't, because they're getting paid to just, give them a soft ride.
Well, the EU's been trying to clamp down on free speech, going with the various bills that have been proposed and nearly passed that would allow for the censorship of shows like yours? That's still a risk,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. And look, and that may happen. Because in the EU, this draconian empire, they really don't like people like me. They don't like people like me because, basically exposing the scam, exposing what's really going on.
It's ironic. It's ironic how, when we were much younger, the Eastern European uprising, you could say it kind of began in Gdansk in Poland with the Union leader Lech Walesa, and then the Pope John Paul II came to visit. The communists couldn't very well say no, the Pope mustn't visit, and millions of Poles turned out. And after that sort of broke the dam, that they couldn't just do like a Hungarian revolution and crush it with tanks. That time was over, and the people who went through that the Eastern European period in the 80s and 90s, some of them are in Ireland now. And they may remember, because a lot of Ukrainians are in Ireland, as I understand, after the war. Plus, when Ireland became part of the EU, and so were countries like Poland, a lot of laborers came from Eastern Europe, especially Poland, Baltic states. So it's not like you're not familiar with these people. And they must be the ones saying, what are you doing? This is what we tried to escape from. We had to have a revolution to throw the communists out. And you're sleepwalking right into it.
Absolutely. And if you look at Eastern Europe and you travel there, you look at even videos from there, it's a totally different world. Look at Poland. You look at Hungary, Czech Republic. It's like they have just said, we're not buying into this nonsense. No, you guys can go off on your own tangent, and we all know that ends in disaster. But we're not embracing, Viktor Orban was a great statesman and a very, very strong leader who was absolutely 100%, I believe, for the Hungarian people and for the Hungarian nation. Now, sadly, he lost office.
The EU never quits. They've had all of, over the last 30 years, they'll have a referendum. It won't pass. They never just say, okay, well, the people have spoken, we're done. They'll come back, they'll reword it. They'll sneak it through another level of the bureaucracy. They'll keep pushing these the EU laws until they can say it's passed. And the main part, the main deal of the EU, other than the financial aspects and no passports for crossing borders, was something called the Schengen Agreement. So the EU said, oh, you won't need a passport to go from country to country inside of the EU. But we'll, don't worry, we'll protect you from the outside. But then they never did. The border was wide open. And now even in Poland, in Romania, in Hungary, if the EU doesn't get a president that they like or a prime minister that they like, they'll find a way to lawfare him out of existence and ban him from running, ban his party, like the AfD in Germany. The EU is absolutely a tyrannical organization now, top to bottom.
It's a complete full-on empire, and it's a very authoritarian empire. And when a thing starts to go, when a project starts to go off the rails, you know it's going off the rails because they have to clamp down on basic things like freedom of speech. I mean, if you know, they don't like criticism. And so they just find more and more mechanisms, as you say, through lawfare to silence critics. And so they're now pushing this thing that YouTube will have to promote, let's say, what they would call authoritative sources, like the BBC and RTE, which essentially is a way of...
State-approved.
Propaganda. So it's essentially, we're into Pravda territory here now, where, you know, they'll just be pushing this schlock onto the population, because they know, quite rightly, as the politicians do here in Ireland, that, sad but true, most people, certainly more mature people, still get their news, their information from the telly, from the television. They still get it there, not from YouTube. They get it from the BBC, RTE, and the various other channels that we have here, and radio stations. And they know this. So for the moment, they can kind of put up with the likes of me, just about. But they don't like it, but they put up with it.
Yeah, I think that Twitter, X, you know, no matter what you think of Elon Musk's other various endeavors in space or other things, the cars, his buying X was really critical. I deleted my Facebook account. I was banned so many times. I'd come back and I'd be given another 30-day ban. It was a revolving door. I nuked my account. And YouTube was useless. A few years ago during the whole, can you say the word COVID without YouTube taking it down? There was a time when you couldn't say it. You had to speak in code. The AI algorithm even then would just search out keywords and say, you're demonetized or you're getting a strike, three strikes, you're out. And that can come back quickly. But because of the fact that Twitter even exists, traffic started leaving Facebook and Instagram. And also, there were ways for videos to be posted on Zoom or even directly on X. So I think that you can give Elon Musk credit for loosening up the free speech even off of X. And if the EU has its way and is able to really crack down on X, you know, fining it for these speech violations, cutting off, you know, disallowing VPNs for people that are trying to reach the internet without having their jobs taken or they're being debanked, losing positions at universities, things like that. I think that we're really, you know, we're right now in a kind of a free speech era, but it could turn bad very quickly.
Absolutely. And with the EU, you never know what they're going to do next, because no authoritarian move is too big or too outrageous for them. They're capable of anything because they think they're doing good work. They believe in the project. They want to all keep their snouts in the trough. They're all making great money out of this, destroying nations, you know, with their policy. They don't care. These people do not care. It's, in my opinion, it's evil what they're doing. But they are all in on this project, and they're prepared to clamp down on anyone, on any voice that starts to get a bit of traction. And that's why I come back to my point about the diaspora. We need to get the word out to the 30 or 40 million Irish Americans who love Ireland and still believe Ireland is a magical place of their ancestors, the Cead Míle Fáilte, all that great stuff. They could apply pressure. This is my theory. they could apply pressure to their Congress representative or their senator or whatever. America, the US, has such a sway and power over the Irish.
In tourism.
Absolutely.
And when they put when in you all slam, of the... You know, I've been in towns around Ireland when you slam an iPass center into one of the landmark hotels, and suddenly, instead of tourists in the heart of a city in Ireland, now there's young migrants from different continents hanging around on the steps and roaming around the parks. It drives the tourism away. You don't come to Ireland to see the Congo or Somalia.
Well, just the other day, Aer Lingus, our national airline, has announced they're laying off 500 staff, and they're also, you know, putting some planes into mothball. And I think a lot of that is to do with the drop in American tourism, because, as you rightly say, Americans want to come here and meet Irish people, lads like me, not me personally, but lads like me, and Irish people, and get the cave meal of all, to get the old, a sense of the old country, if you like, and they're not getting that now. You arrive at Dublin Airport, the first person you meet is probably an Indian, and then you go down then you meet somebody from the Congo, and you go down further, and it's somebody from Mongolia. So you mightn't see an Irish person for your first few hours. That's
the way
it's gone.
Pocket picked by a gypsy.
Yeah, yeah. I was coming to that. But that's the tragedy.
Yeah, well, Derek, we've only got like a minute and a half left on this hour, but it's just a Sunday night show. But, you know, it gives us the practice and establishes the link. So the next time that I'm guest hosting during prime hours, when it'll be just early evening in Ireland, then I'll try to get you back on. And unfortunately, there's news coming out of Ireland almost every week, and it's usually not happy news. It's usually a reminder that your trader class doesn't care about you and puts the invaders way ahead of you. So I'll give you the last minute about to sum up. What are your links? Where can people find you?
Well, I do most of my work on YouTube, Derek Domino. If you just type that in, I should pop up. My handsome face should pop up into your screen. So click on that and see what you make of it. I put out a video every day, sometimes more than one video every day. And I'm just trying to get the word out in any way and every way I can about the reality of what's actually happening here in Ireland. Because it's tragedy. It's tragedy unfolding in real time and at a pace that's hard to fathom. It's really head-spinning stuff. So the more people that know this, the better chance we have of creating some kind of momentum, some kind of movement that may end up pushing the politicians, be it kicking and screaming, I don't care, pushing them into doing what's right for the country.
All right, we're out of time. We'll see you the next time. See you after the break. I'll be back. You're welcome.
America is now 250 years old. July 4th isn't about delicious cheeseburgers and fireworks, though I love them so much. It's about what does America stand for? The globalists cannot have our country survive. They want transhumanism. They want the Great Reset. They want the New World Order. That's why they demonize America. That's why they pay the NBA and the NFL to take a knee during the anthem and push all this communist Chinese garbage. Because what America stands for is antithetical to what they're doing. So, when you go to thealexshowshore.com, we have a whole summer line that just rolled out. We'll show you some of these designs. And most of them, I came up with the concepts. I'm pretty proud of it. I think this is a badass shirt. It's the Betsy Ross flag. And it says, Rebel Scum Since 1776. And the designs just get better from there. And they fund the Second American Revolution happening right now. Because our Revolutionary War never really ended. We're just one continued arc, the flower of the Renaissance, challenging totalitarians and authoritarian scum. Because in truth, they're the scum, we are the future, and we are winning. You wanted 1980-style wife beaters? We got a whole bunch of them with great slogans like less 1984, more 1776. Got another great shirt, make Orwell fiction again, and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com. And I got to tell you, this fabric, how light it is, how good it feels. I asked the folks at Bigley, can we have some dress shirts? And I sent them an example. This is even better than the shirt I bought that was similar to it. This is awesome. This shirt is so light. It's so great in the summer. Get yours now along with dozens of new designs and so much more at thealexjonesstore.com.